Margaret Brown sent around word to gather Titanic's first-class passengers in the lounge. I regarded the bedraggled lot, most of them widowed just hours earlier. Like the rest, I scoured the room, searching for the face most familiar to me. Other wives would accept that they'd never see their beloveds again and were already considering what comes next. Lost claims, wills, estates. But those were legalities I wasn't ready to face. Not yet. I wasn't about to grieve. Bradley was not dead. He would not desert me. When I found him, my worry would dissolve in a puff of smoke, and gratitude would fill my very soul. I saw Andrew, our dear and brave steward from the Titanic, wander in and stand in the back. My heart pained for him. Captain Rostron said only 60 stewards had been rescued. 60 out of hundreds. There was no assigned section for stewards aboard Carpathia, but as far as I was concerned, Andrew deserved to be with the first-class passengers. I was glad to see him there. Mrs. Brown raised her arm to get the attention of the group.
"I am hereby forming a survivors' committee," she announced, "and I nominate myself as chairman. Any objections?"
There were none.
"The second and third class survivors have nothing more than the clothes on their backs,"
Mrs. Brown continued.
"They have no money, no one to meet them at the dock, and nowhere to go. I, for one, know how that feels."
It was well known Mrs. Brown came from bleak poverty. After she married a prospector who struck gold, she found her way into companionship with the moneyed. I suspected it was her bank account, not her breeding, that invited her into their circles. From what I observed, the wealthy regarded Mrs. Brown as a sort of amusement. But she was a woman who got things done, and I liked that about her. The gold heiress swept her arm over the disheveled survivors.
"Who'll be the first to cough up some dough to help 'em out?"
We were all victims of tragedy now, the rich as much as those with nothing. Colonel Gracie had been meandering around the decks, making sure people were warm and comfortable enough under the circumstances. His was the first donation. The others followed with pledges in the hundreds of dollars. Madeline Astor offered $2,000. Mrs. Brown wrote down names and amounts and put the money into an envelope. I found a bill in my purse, and as I handed it to Mrs. Brown, I whispered to her.
"Sure,"
Mrs. Brown said. Andrew turned to leave the lounge when Mrs. Brown tapped him on the shoulder.
"You'll need this, son,"
she pressed the bill into his hand.
"Get some clothes in New York. You'll look like hell."
I suspected he wanted to tell Mrs. Brown to give it to someone who needed it more, but Mrs. Brown interrupted.
"Good luck to you, son,"
she said, and spun around, trotting to hand out money to needy passengers. I watched him look at the bill with the number 100 printed in the upper right-hand corner and a picture of John Knox on the left. Then he scanned the room. When our eyes met, I gave him the subtlest nod. Nothing else was necessary.